On Earth, these spirits had no vision of spiritual things and they were wholly absorbed in material pleasures, worldly success or base desires. Those aspects of life which were at best of only passing value had absorbed their efforts. With the eyes of the soul still blind, they now try only to live again their earthly interests and joys. And those whose desires were evil strive to attract others, both spirits and those still in our world, to their own false standards. With them life does not advance, but only futilely repeats itself. Among these earthbound souls are the suicides. These, by nature of their crime, must have been those for whom hard conditions of existence on earth swallowed up all else till black despair cut off every ray of spiritual light. They bring hither the same state of mind, and, deaf and blind to higher consolation, they struggle back to earth to undergo again the horror of self-murder at the very spot where the extremity of despair formerly overtook them. The same retribution overtakes those who have committed murder or other crimes of atrocious violence. For the earth soft-bound souls bring with them their world as they have made it. Such is the permanent population of this realm. Anxious to see for myself the details of life in this sphere, I sought the dwelling places of the earthbound souls. The contrast between their existence and that of the progressive spirits was startling. In the faces of the earthbound spirits is expressed all their evil passions and desires, all their low or earthly aims. Their aura is very dark in color, contrasting strongly with that of progressing spirits, amongst whom light colors prevail: white, cream, pink, pale blue and many others. For as the spirit becomes brighter, the aura expresses the change by its increasing brightness. But among the earth soft-bound spirits one sees only dark auras and a dark clothing, and always of the fashion worn on earth, just as their faces carry still the plain stamp of earthly lusts and weaknesses. The dark cloud that rests on their faces seems heavily charged with the despair and malice of their evil deeds. I entered a house and found that room led on to room in a straight and seemingly endless line. Every room was the home of a spirit when not seeking the old haunts on earth. Many of the dwellers were strange and terrible. In one room sat the squat and ugly form of a woman who on earth had kept a house of ill fame. She had been the ruin of the body and soul of many an unfortunate girl. Now, though in the spirit world, her one horrible desire was to continue her former infamous career. She could still influence young girls to go astray and lead them to a gutter life, or she could take possession of them and compel them to ruin. As I passed, she appeared to be sitting before a mirror painting her face. She was wearing the style and form of dress and finery of her profession on earth, and her face was dark with vulgar malice. She gave me a vicious look, as if to say, "Who are you and what do you want here?" Then she turned insolently away to continue painting her face. I shuddered as I hurried from her presence to another room, where I found tenants of many types, pathetic, or repulsive, or horrible. In one room a lady was pacing the floor with slow deliberation. Her stately figure, her aristocratic and refined manner caught and held my attention. She was dressed as a fashionable 17 lady of the middle of last century, and was tall. Her face bore evidence of having been very beautiful on earth. Her personality aroused in me a sympathy so strong and immediate that I exclaimed, "Why is she here?" "You may ask her," said my guide. Approaching her, I asked, "Why are you here?" With a graceful gesture she replied with regret, yet with apparent resignation, "How could I leave these?" I looked down at the point she designated and saw with surprise a wonderful collection of sparkling jewels on which she fixed her eyes. I understood, the jewels which she had owned on earth still possessed her soul. They held her now as then, and linked her to earth with a chain that only she could break. Hence her residence among the earth soft-bound souls. I looked at her sympathetically and went on my way. Such spirits can look forward only to an existence of despondency or misery. They have made their own conditions, and only a realization of the worthlessness of their ideals, and a sincere desire to free themselves from them can release them to a brighter existence. Too often among the earth's soft-bound souls no such desire exists, for many are wholly dominated by the desire of evil. I came across many such. One of them particularly attracted my attention because he was such an unusually horrible specimen of this type of spirits. Evil seemed to have actually deformed him. His face was ill-soft-proportioned, far too wide for its height. There was hardly anything one could call a nose, and the mouth stretched from ear to ear. The ears, abnormally large, hung below the chin. Beneath an extremely flat forehead nearer the temples than the nose, was set a large pair of eyes that shone with a diabolical malice which froze the very spirit within me. His face expressed only evil, low lust and ruthless hatred. I clung to my guide for protection. The arms of this misshapen spirit dangled loosely from the grotesque frame. His fingers, gnarled and rough, resembled the claws of an eagle. The color of this spirit was dark brown, the most undesirable color in the spirit world, for it indicates the lowest state of existence. His robe of the same color was caught at the wrist in such a manner that, when he lifted his arms, he resembled a huge flying bat. My guide explained to me that such a spirit spent most of his time on the earth, endeavoring to win over mortals to a life of sin and evil such as he had himself indulged in. Such are the army of evil spirits whose only work is to sway mortals to low desires or to possess their minds for purposes of malefactions. They are the army of wrong, in whom love of good has atrophied until they recoil from the high things of the spirit as from an element deadly to their nature. Change from this state is hard indeed, but not impossible, for there, as here, everyone is left to carve out his own destiny. In himself repose the seeds of change. He alone can make them grow. But the farther such a soul has departed from good, the harder it is to return. Every evil deed demands its compensation, and the balance must be struck in the soul. In this sense only is there heaven and hell. What we are is what becomes of us. Yet the slightest sigh for change is heard and guidance given. While passing through the realm of the earth soft-bound I came upon scenes yet more pathetic and tragic, which I would gladly erase from my memory, were it possible. A woman spirit helper approached and silently motioned me to follow. I felt her authority, and followed her through densely populated parts alternating with empty spaces. As we passed along I studied her silently, for no word was spoken between us, she seeming engrossed in her own reflections. Her flowing dress was shining white, her head covering fell gracefully down her back, and her hands rested on her breast. In form and face she was very beautiful, and a bright white aura enveloped her with radiance. But it was of her spiritual qualities that I was chiefly conscious. Purity, love and sympathy seemed to emanate from her as the perfume from a flower. Strength of intellect 18 and high authority clothed her in dignity. My mind was divided between admiration for my guide and speculation as to where she was taking me. Presently our journey ended before the huge gates of an enclosure of prodigious size. Before the gates stood a tall, silent, and motionless figure, evidently a guard. His expression was austere and passionless and added to the impression of desolation that pervaded the whole scene. Only the presence of my guide gave me courage to remain. On an order from him the two ponderous gates slowly swung back and as slowly closed behind us. What I beheld was strange, and no less depressing and horrible. The vast enclosure was a place of detention, a hospital, a house of correction for those spirits who arrived with minds clouded or shattered by the use of drugs or liquor, or by indulgence in their evil passions on earth. Here their minds, and often their astral bodies, remained crippled as on earth. On couches, on the floor, or huddled in corners lay or crouched these wrecks of humanity, blind of spirit and shriveled of limb, often entirely unclothed, with stupor or dull hopelessness written in their eyes. The atmosphere of death, desolation, and despair filled my soul with anguish. My woman guide suddenly stopped. Here before us on a bench lay a shape twisted and deformed. Its motionless silence seemed horrible, the face was terribly distorted, and the limbs a random heap. Yet I recognized with horror the face of one whose life once closely touched mine. I looked at the helper. Why had she shown me this man, the thought of whom brought up such painful memories? The helper's grave eyes met mine. "Can you not help him?" she said. "You once stood close to him on earth. For sympathy and love are necessary for even a spirit of highly developed nature to assist an earth-soft-bound soul." "Yes," I said, "I was once close to this spirit, but I am so no longer." Yet, not to neglect a possible chance to be of aid, I conquered my antipathy sufficiently to touch him 3 times upon the head, calling him by the old familiar name. It was of no avail. He remained sunk in his stupor, and the helper said sadly, "I fear you can do nothing, knowing well the reason for my failure. For on earth I had contracted intense dislike for this person, nor could I yet shake off this repugnance. Hence there was between us no point of contact, for sympathy and love is the first step to spiritual help." The helper motioned me to follow, and again we slowly passed on towards the gates. Here my eyes caught sight of the figure of a young man, apparently of Latin race, reclining against the wall in a half-sitting posture. His features betrayed the terrible sufferings he had undergone and which he was still experiencing. His eyes roved from side to side with an expression of sneering, malicious resentment which did not veil the hopeless despair in their depths. He had undoubtedly been scrutinizing those who entered for a long time in the hope of some assistance. Now his supplicating gaze was turned on me. But my recent experience told me that I could offer him no aid. As I was passing out, I turned and again reviewed the harrowing scene, and exclaimed, sadly and perhaps with a note of protest in my tone, "But why are all these here? Who has brought them into this terrible place?" "No one but themselves," said the helper gravely. "Their deeds have placed them there." I asked no more questions but followed the helper in silence. I had now left behind not only the abode of highly developed spirits who wait only to be guided to higher planes, the thronging dwelling places of those earnestly striving for further spiritual growth, but also the depressing realms of earth-soft-bound souls. And now I came to the dwellings of a multitude of quite different type. Here dwelled those who are not bound by material things of earth, but who are yet of but rude imagery spiritual development. On earth these people were respectable, trustworthy, and even kind. Evil did not tempt them. They lived the pleasant life of the pleasant portion of the world. If they thought of their spiritual life at all, it was with 19 approval, for were they not good citizens, good neighbors? But on the whole they gave little consideration to the things of the spirit. Most certainly they did not prefer the unseen things to the seen and known. Their souls were fallow, uncultivated, fields season after season. They did not grow noxious weeds, but neither did they ripen the golden wheat of the soul. Hence, though now in a realm where infinite possibilities open ahead, their progress is slow. They live as on earth in pleasant houses with delightful gardens, surprisingly like their surroundings here, in touch with friends to whom they are courteous and neighborly, dressing as they did on earth, and distinguished by the bright and cheerful colors of their aura, in strong contrast to the earth-soft-bound souls. But they are content with their earth-soft-made ambitions, and with the easy virtue of pleasant, unheroic life, unmindful of the spiritual struggle that marks everywhere the upward road. Sometimes because of mutual sympathy they live together in groups of 3 or 4 or more, but more often man is attracted to woman somewhat as on this earth, though there the bond is purely spiritual. Here I found living an aunt and a cousin of my own. On earth this lady had long presided over the house of my cousin, a wealthy banker, who, like her, never married. Their long and harmonious life together had produced an ease of intercourse that made its continuance natural. So in the spirit world I found them again living contentedly, and reproducing as far as might be the details of their earthly life. Even the good soft-natured superiority of the aristocratic class that they represented was reproduced in their new life, its narrow human sympathies, its entire respectability, and its rectitude. No atmosphere could well be more hostile to change, and their development had been slow, though my aunt's was clearly somewhat more rapid than my cousin's. He knew me, and evidently knew the conditions of my visit to the spirit world, for drawing me close to him, he said, "Carolyn, you have done well. Where is Aunt Herlig?" I asked. "She is out doing some work of mercy. She often goes for that purpose," he replied. Evidently she had progressed far enough to set her feet on the right path. Here I also came across a girl recently arrived in the spirit world, who on earth had been one of my friends. She recognized me and seemed interested to see me. In talking with her, I felt that her mind was in a peculiar state of haziness concerning her own position. She had joined a number of friends and acquaintances from Earth who had all lived in the same city and had all attended the same church. All of them were in the same confused and uncertain condition of mind. They had evidently banded together, as would a number of people from the same place when stranded in a strange country surrounded by strange people and conditions. They kept together for mutual encouragement, advice, and to help each other solve their new problems. They gathered at regular intervals in the same meeting place, carrying on endless discussions in an attempt to arrive at some conclusion concerning the meaning of the whole affair, what they ought to do, and how it should be done. At their gatherings they observed some of the ceremonies and formalities which they used in their church services on earth. But these meetings always ended in a free soft-all discussion. I was present at one of these discussions, and it was interesting to see how eager all were to propound their own theories. One tall man would get up and, beginning with, "Well now, let me explain. This is the way I think it is," would go on for a while, when another would interrupt him with a, "No, I don't believe it is so. Now I am certain this is the solution." And he would for a time propound his ideas, emphasizing his words with a pounding of his right fist against the palm of his left hand. He would have gone some way in his discourse when a woman would interrupt and express her doubt as to the preceding speaker's views. And so it went on until each had had his say. When they all had said something, they were 20 no further than when they had begun. Then they would disperse in all directions, only to drift back again to find out if anyone had received any new information. One thing I noted with particular interest: many preferences and prejudices of Earth still prevail there, though not intensely enough to hamper development. Thus the lives of race and nationality commonly prevail, but in a spirit of friendly mutual agreement. These seem the more closely to reproduce the ways of their former lives. I learned this when I asked why I saw no Orientals. Finding that they naturally preferred to live together, though they are under no compulsion to do so, I was impelled to visit their quarters. I found them living here much as they lived in their own lands, with houses and gardens in Oriental style, exercising the characteristic courtesy, grace and hospitality which appeared in their delightful attentions to me. They gave me delicious fruit and a delectable drink. It was exceedingly delightful to walk in their lovely Oriental gardens, filled with specimens of exotic flowers, and I was delighted beyond measure with their entire treatment of me. I thought to show my appreciation by leaving with them some slight gift. This I quietly did, and believed I had succeeded in my plan, but on reaching the confines of this quarter, I was embarrassed to find one of my Japanese friends standing before me with my little gift. This he handed me with a smile and a low bow, and disappeared before I could protest. I did not, of course, see all of this first plain, but I saw enough to know that there every spirit is free to follow his own ideals and inclinations. His destiny is in his own hands, limited only by his past life. But since spiritual barriers are the strongest of all, class cannot mingle with class. Should an earth soft-bound spirit stray into the region of higher souls, his dark aurora would betray him, and a current, as of electric energy, proceeding from the first spirit he would meet, would sweep him back to his own place. There is but one path upward, that of personal effort to become fit for a higher type of existence. To this the activities of the place are directed, and for this end order and discipline prevail. For no one is permitted to interfere with the efforts of others. On the whole, life is good and pleasant among those on the upward path, but words cannot express the dark hopelessness of the completely earthbound souls. I found no heaven nor hell except as it exists in the spirit. The second spirit plane with my guide I now passed on to the second spirit plane. This great realm I found to be merely a continuation of the first plane, except for the fact that there were there no earthbound souls. Its inhabitants were working for higher attainments and there were many spirit helpers to teach and assist, and guide the steady flow of newcomers through their varied periods of residence, until these learners were ready for higher planes. Thus the inhabitants were constantly changing, as those who move upward were replaced by others. Life there was pleasant, and varied to suit different tastes, some choosing to dwell in cities, others in the open country among the fields, delightfully established in their beautiful white houses of highly artistic architecture and ornamentation situated in the midst of charming gardens filled with masses of the loveliest flowers. The higher spiritual attainments of this plane demonstrated itself by the bright and lighter hues of the aura as well as by the elevation of the ideals of the new inhabitants. The dress of the 21 women, I noted, resembled closely that of the spirit helper of the hospital, while the garb of the men was similar to that of my guide, a flowing garment like a toga. For there is, in the second plane, no desire to garb oneself in clothes of the general earthly appearance, an evidence of the weakening of earthly ideals. We spent little time there. As I have explained, I visited the third and fourth planes before I went, at my own request, to the lower spheres. Hence these two realms were the last I saw in the spirit world. The third plane was a fair and glorious world, impossible of adequate description in the terms of our worldly speech. Those who there resided were highly perfected spirits, for to be admitted they must have reached an advanced stage of development. Nor was it possible that others should enter, for their mental states would have betrayed their presence. The light of this plane was of surpassing, all soft hyphen pervading brightness, and, united with that given by each spirit, was dazzling in its brilliancy. Wonderful beauty everywhere enthralled the eye. The place was like a great garden, with bushes and shrubbery of gorgeous hues, and stately trees, some like magnificent palms, others of forms unknown on earth, as if nature and art had been perfectly blended to charm the eye. About the houses of the happy ones bloomed a wealth of flowers whose rare and delicate colors vied, competed, with odor, scent, surpassing those of Araby the Blessed. There were no large cities there, the homes were placed in little groups of two or three like pearls in a rich setting of lawn and garden too fair for human words. Here and there rose stately edifices where large gatherings congregated to field the influence of guides and teachers from higher planes, an influence exerted by speech or by subtler means. The dress worn there was very simple, only a flowing robe sufficiently varied to emphasize the distinction between the men and the women. It was colored, as usual, by the aura of the wearer, the lighter and paler shades alone appearing, such as pink, pale orange, creamy, pale blue, white, and others difficult to describe. The delicate hues of these robes, and the multitude of colors in the blankets of flowers massed against the olive green of the landscape charged the dazzling air with beauty till the eye of the beholder was rapt by the harmony of sight, as in great music the ear is rapt by the harmony of sound. In this happy plane the inhabitants had solved the puzzle of universal brotherhood, here on earth the subject of centuries of debate, and still impossible of full realization. Not only were they dwelling in complete harmony, the dream of the altruist had been realized. Each lived for the other, since in that pure sphere the interests of all were one. There was, it is true, room for envy and jealousy, in the great authority of the more intelligent, for in a perfect world all merit must be recognized. But the spirit from which envy springs did not exist there, for envy implies a selfish aim. In that spirit realm each knows that he has been accorded full justice, and each gloried in the greater merit of his fellow while those of superior gifts humbly regarded their heritage as a privilege. Indeed, In that purer sphere, degrees of merit must have seemed trivialities compared with the boundless heights which beckoned beyond. Love and sympathy would permit no discord. From this plane come the helpers, teachers and angels of mercy, who work among the less fortunate inhabitants of the lower spheres. This service, however, is an act of their own volition proceeding from their sympathy and desire to serve, a benefice which results in their own further development. Spirit children, my keenest interest in the spirit world was aroused by my visit to the realm where dwell the spirit children who come thither in childhood. Around my experience in that realm cluster the most beautiful memories. There the spirit children grow through all stages of childhood and youth. All small children pass directly from earth to the third plane, to continue their bodily and spiritual growth. My experience there was a wonderful revelation. The place was one vast garden of heavenly splendor, in which stood numberless magnificent buildings, for utilitarian and recreational purposes. Women helpers, who have known motherhood on earth, cared with tender solicitude for the babies and little children. Older children were taught and guided with minute care and that never soft hyphen failing kindness which, however, does not neglect discipline. Men and women helpers of various qualifications, superintended by superior spirits, carried on their appealing work. Naturally, no more perfect system could exist, nor could more ideal surroundings be imagined. Nothing but beauty met the eye, no ugliness could there distort the mind. Flowers of gorgeous hues in beds of rare designs, trees of perfect form and beauty, birds of varied plumage, fruits of delicious flavor are but the more obvious privileges of that delightful land. Paths through shrubbery and across parks divinely planned led to playgrounds where those fortunate children were seen at play beside their helpers and teachers. It was an atmosphere of beauty, obedience and love. I saw that the study of plants and flowers was an eagerly soft-followed occupation, which was supplemented by the care of gardens, in perpetual bloom. No sooner had a flower faded or been picked than another blossomed from the same stem. As I passed through the beauties and wonders of this place, my mind constantly sought for comparisons from earth, for earth of course was still my home. I found no satisfactory comparison, all was different. I thought, for example, of the ground on which I walked, was it solid, as on earth? To test it, I stepped from the path to the loose soil of the garden beds, and jumped lightly up and down. The earth seemed to give way like swampy ground, but my feet did not sink, nor did they leave footprints as on earth. As if to fill my cup of joy in this lovely spot, I recognized among the children a sister of mine who died when but a few years old. As I was passing down a beautiful path, enthralled by the wonder of color and fragrance, I saw this young girl kneeling to pick a flower. Something about her held my attention, and I gazed on her intently as I came nearer. She looked to be 16 or 17. She was clad in a simple white dress reaching just below the knee, and leaving neck and arms bare. The sweet and serene beauty of her face was framed in a mass of blonde hair that fell loosely almost to her waist. She made a picture of appealing beauty as she bent toward the flowers, her transparent fingers encircling the stems. As I approached, she half-turned her head, and for a moment we gazed into each other's faces. Instantaneously I recognized her as that little child who had died on my lap, now a young woman of the spirit world. The look on her face was one of intense surprise, as if she were saying, "What, are you also here?" Tender love shone in her eyes. My feelings seemed to overpower me. I strove to pause and speak, but some strange power held me silent, and urged me on. I could not stop, but I turned several times to gaze on her, standing motionless, forgetful of the flower, looking intently after me, with that same mingling of love and sweet surprise till I passed from sight. Once more the curiosity of the earth moved me, and I wanted to taste the fruit I saw growing so beautifully there. No sooner had I wished than a hand reached out from the thick foliage and presented me with an apple. I did not see the owner of the hand. I tasted, and found my senses thrilled with a delicious flavor like nothing on this earth. Leaving the land of children, I passed through other parts of this plane, where I moved among the throngs of exalted beings, the mansions without end, in the midst of stately gardens.